Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a former chef, food lover, and an entrepreneur. At a very young age, my guest was finding ways to take action and make money, from collecting mishit golf balls to apprenticing at the French Laundry, a 3-Michelin-star restaurant. After college, him and his friend started a business called Social Feed and was quickly acquired. This left him time to think about his next venture. So in February 2012, over drinks in a local Toronto bar, my guest and his co-founder decided to start a subscription box service catering to men who love to eat good food. This is the birth of Mantree. Now, over 5 years later, Mantree is the number one food subscription for men. Now, let's hack. Reggie Milligan. When you make a wrong hire, you feel it immediately. Your team's performance, morale, and the bottom line all suffer. And whether you're screening candidates for an important position or looking for ways to improve productivity, Caliper can help you and your business. Caliper offers in-depth assessments for potential hires and current employees. Their deep knowledge and personality insights uncover key traits and behaviors, plus what motivates employees to succeed. Caliper's unique approach works with every size company and industry, from startups to the Fortune 500. In fact, their science and expertise have helped over 30,000 businesses hire, retain, and develop top talent. Caliper has an incredible offer for Hack the Entrepreneur listeners. You can assess your team for free. You'll discover what makes each person tick and improve the performance of your team. They'll also give you an hour of free consulting. To take them up on this offer right now and to find out more, visit calipercorp.com/hack. That's calipercorp.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Reggie, welcome to the show.
How are you doing? I'm happy to be here.
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking the time to join me. I appreciate it, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun. Should we jump into it?
Let's jump into it.
Let's do it. Reggie, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Wow. That's a big question. Well, I think the thing that made me an entrepreneur, I think it makes me being an entrepreneur a little different is, I just started things really quickly. I kind of pull the ripcord as quickly as possible on ideas. I know that when we started Mantree, like our current project now, we basically had the site up in like 3 days or something like that. So although I think it's a true skill that you get used to if you start enough companies or have enough projects on the go, that like I think of it as a very binary outcome. For me, it's zero or one. Like anything in the planning stage is a zero, but a second it goes live, it's a one. And I think that, you know, we've been successful just because we haven't spent too much time worrying or overthinking or tweaking the gray in our logo or worrying about that we don't have the right domain or handle or whatever, and just launching and getting it out there. But I think that's served us well. I mean, it's also cost us dearly rushing into things, but it's but it's something that I'll always take like one big, I'll always just leap in really quickly as opposed to try and hesitate. And that's been very helpful.
I like it. If there was some way we could aggregate the number of amazingly cool projects and products and services that have never seen the light of day because people are afraid to just pull that ripcord.
Yes.
So it is this a skill sort of, so we got to go back a little bit because I know you went to school up in Canada, being a Canadian, even though you're down in the States now, but you Bachelor of Commerce, I believe, with entrepreneurship. So did you have businesses before, or what was the process of leading you to take entrepreneurship in school?
Well, first of all, I love the University of Victoria and I went there. I wasn't necessarily the greatest student of all time. And I would say most of my education came in other areas outside of the classroom while I was at UVic. But I do technically on a piece of paper somewhere have a Bachelor of Entrepreneurship. And like, I think what led me, I mean, listen, when I started, grew up on a golf course, and probably the best business I've ever run. I used to go into the ditches and the gullies. I'd find balls, I'd polish them up, and I'd sell them out of an egg carton at about 12 years old for a buck a piece. And I mean, that's pure profit, a buck a ball. I remember going down there being, like I said, 12 years old, making $40 in a day when all I ever wanted to do was buy a Wonder Bar. So it's like, I'll probably never make so much money relative to how much I needed than that time, making 40 bucks when all I needed was like a buck or two. So that's honestly, I got a taste of it there. I probably did that for two summers. And yeah, when I went to school, I basically just found my way into the entrepreneurship, you know, racket at UVic there. And, you know, it's kind of a funny program to do, I think, is to do an entrepreneurship, because like, you're basically learning entrepreneurship from like tenured professors, which can be kind of contrary, but at the same time, there's a lot of like simple principles and stuff that I did learn in school, mostly just like how to hit deadlines and actually get things done and find ways to, you know, work with other people and pull things together quickly.
So you feel like, I mean, from collecting golf balls, making more money relative to what you needed now to buy chocolate bars, you got sort of that bug. So, and then, I mean, even sort of backtracking and sort of like on your heels being like, well, it's kind of a weird thing to take in school because it is.
Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, I'm not like putting it down in any way. Was the process like, did you feel obliged to go to school with family or with friends or something? Or why didn't you just go straight into business? Because looking at your like history of what you've done, it was like you went to university and then you started a business.
That's a great question. So to backtrack even further, I don't know if we spoke about this, but I grew up working in fine dining restaurants. So when I was like 14 years old, I worked at a restaurant up in Vancouver called Lumiere, which at the time was kind of the number one restaurant in Canada. It's a Relay and Chateau, which is a fancy distinction that they have in restaurants throughout North America. And then I ended up, when I was like 17, I got offered a full ride scholarship to culinary school. Instead, I took an apprenticeship at the French Laundry, which is like a 3-Michelin-star restaurant down in the Napa Valley. It's very, very, it's kind of one of the temples of American gastronomy, if you really want to get into it. But yada, yada, yada. I was pretty deep into cooking. And when you asked me when I was like 18 years old what I was going to do with the rest of my life, I'd be like, I'm going to open like a 3-Michelin-star restaurant when I'm 23 years old. And, you know, like, I guess it would be the equivalent of someone being like, I'm going to be on Chef's Table, you know what I mean, right now or something. So I really threw myself into that. And I pretty much just burnt out of restaurants when I was like probably about 20, 21. And so I didn't really know what to do, kind of went back to van. And then I ended up going to school, and I actually, like, my marks weren't really good enough to get into university. So I like went to a community college out there on Vancouver Island and then sort of worked my way into UVic and eventually the entrepreneurship program. But I think that for me, it sounds like a counterintuitive ideology, but I kind of was like, I just don't really want to totally miss out on like going to college. And
yeah, fair enough.
I always knew that I wanted to work for myself and start businesses. And I was like, okay, I'm going to probably do that for a long time, but I can't go to college when I'm like 40, or I can't do like an undergrad and like live in dorms when I'm 40, I don't think appropriately. So I just was like, I'm just going to like give it a go and see what's up. But I always knew as soon as I graduated that, you know, I was going to just try and launch something on my own.
Okay. And that's totally fair. And well, no, it is. And it's your reason for it, which is totally cool. And then I know previously you said like, and then when we started Mantry, like the way you said it almost made it seem like the co-founder from your previous business, Social Feed, was also the same co-founder of Mantry. That's totally an assumption I'm making right now.
No, they're different. Yeah, they're different partners and co-founders. Social Feed was really birthed out of when I was at university, because I had the chef and cooking background, I used to always throw big dinner parties at my, I had this like old loft and I would just throw dinner parties because I knew how to cook. So we'd invite like 15 people, 20 people, and people would invite friends of friends. And like, it became a very, very powerful and unique way to just like meet people, because somebody would bring, you know, how dinner parties are like, people are like, okay, show up at 8 o'clock with, I'll show up at 8 o'clock, and then they show up at like 8:30 with like four people. So we, you know, it was just became this very powerful way to meet people. And we just said, hey, there's something here. So what Social Feed started as is we basically went through Vancouver and Toronto and we threw long table communal dinners where there'd be, you know, maybe 30 or 40 people at a table and everybody would be buying tickets individually. And it was meant to be like a meetup.com meets dinner party where people would just come and you would, you know, with the assumption that you're going to dine with strangers over dinner and meet a bunch of people.
Wow. I love it. I love the sort of interrelation of obviously food through all of this. And the idea, well, like growing up and thinking that that's what you were going to be when you were going to start a restaurant. And now you take it into Social Feed. And then at some point, I guess Social Feed, you sort of, it runs its course and then you find a new partner? What is it?
Yeah. So Social Feed, I mean, we basically just, there was a company that was doing something similar out of the States and they were looking to move into Canada. And so they kind of acquired what we'd built with Social Feed. And then I was sort of left with, in Toronto, wondering what the next step is. And, you know, one of the partners with Social Feed, like went to law school. Another one was working on other projects. So that's sort of what led into, I would say within like 2 or 3 months after Social Feed, Mantry launched. So now you're making me think that I've like been doing entrepreneurship for like 7.5 years or 8 years or something. I'm like, oh my God, becoming, that's a long time on the dark side.
There's no going back now, Reggie.
Yeah, I know. I'm unemployable. It's official.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So at the beginning, you told me your one thing is that you have that ability to start really quickly and pull that ripcord. Now in business, everybody talks about this 80-20 rule. You find that 20% that gets you the 80%. You do what you're good at, but then you delegate and get rid of the rest. Reggie, can you tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
Yeah, the 80-20 rule. Like I think, sorry, can I swear?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, so anyway, I just think the 80-20 rule is so hilarious because I, believe me, I've read every self-help and business books. I actually like Audible. And so I think I have my stats. I could show them to you. I'm like at a month and a half of like listen to audiobooks or something on my own stats. And every time, every book mentions this 80-20. And I think it's so funny because it's almost like in order to find the key 20, you have to like do a bunch of random shit that doesn't matter, right? So like, that's what they don't talk about. It's like, they make it seem like you can just sit back and be like, okay, think for 5 seconds and be like, okay, I got to do these two things and these other 8 things don't matter, you know? So I think that to bring it back to your question of just, you know, what am I not good at? I mean, I'm not good at a lot of things there. I think rushing into things, the vice versa of what I said, which is a skill, has its sort of downfall. But I think that the main thing that I would, I think it's what I've, something that I struggled with a lot with entrepreneurship is just realizing that it's like an energy game and realizing that you are just going to have like days and weeks that suck. And you just go into these like slumps and these dips and you're like, should I be doing something else? Should I work on, you know, other projects? And then all of a sudden something great will come out of it and you'll spring out of it and you'll be all excited for another month or something. And I just think that for a long, long time, I was sort of like, wasn't as good at managing those troughs and have become better at that, you know, as time goes on. But I think that for a large portion of at least four or five years of Mantri, like that's definitely something that's always a struggle.
So days and weeks are going to suck, which is absolutely true. So when you say it's an energy game, like, do you have sort of a way you could explain? I know that somebody's going to be listening and like they haven't got to the point where they figured out that it's an energy game and sort of how to work through it. So like, right. How have you sort of figured out to work through those days and weeks that do suck?
Yeah. So when I say an energy game, I really mean like showing up. It's a cliche, but like showing up is honestly half the battle. You know what I mean? And just putting in your 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 hours or whatever you want to do a day. And like, if you don't have other areas of your life in check, like it's really hard to do what you're doing with entrepreneurship. And what I mean with that is like, maybe when I first started the business, like I'd be going out late on Friday and Saturday nights, like partying, and then I would, you know, wouldn't be exercising properly and like would be skipping meals and like, you know, skipping time to like, let's say, do things like chill out and meditate or go for a walk, or I'd work 6 hours straight and get super frustrated over small details as opposed to realizing like work for 45 minutes and then take 15 minutes off. And you kind of go through this process and then you get to a point where you realize like you just kind of, I mean, I approach everything now kind of as a system. I actually read a book, I think it was like Bill Walsh, who's like an old coach of the 49ers. He wrote this book and something that resonated with it was this idea of, he just says to his players, like, trust the process, which is basically means like, don't focus on the score. Don't focus on touchdowns. Don't focus on like whether you're winning or losing, like just do your job. And we can always correct like how you're doing the job, but just trust the process. And I think that has been comforting. And so, you know, to somebody who's just starting, like you're going to be jacked for the first 6 months. Like, and if you're not jacked for the first 6 months on your startup idea, you should probably just stop. But because like that's the easiest time to really build energy and momentum. But if you kind of just focus on like putting in a good day's work every day, and now my day is more of a routine where it's get up nice and early. I usually get up at like 5:15. I'll do a bit of a meditation. I'll read for an hour. I'll do 4 hours of work, hit the gym, 4 hours of work, and then I'll just stop at 6 o'clock. And it's more of this sort of like putting work into like jigsaw puzzle, where if I don't get anything done in a day, I'm like, I'm more at peace with it because I'm like, okay, I'm coming back tomorrow. And to round off like kind of the idea, I guess it takes a really, really long time. And this is where I said I'd sucked at it. All right, what I sucked at is that like, it takes a really, really long time to realize that, for me, it did, that when you're an entrepreneur, you don't have a boss and you don't have a manager. And that's wonderful. But part of that is you don't have somebody looking over you that's really dictating and planning out and making you work. So it's important that you almost like hold yourself more accountable than like the hardest boss you've ever had would. And I think that takes a lot of time to understand, that you have to have structure and you have to have a routine and you have to stick to it day in and day out if you're going to try and build something.
Yeah. And understanding that it does take a long time to figure these things out. And then to go back to the point you made about how, if you're not like completely just like super excited about your idea in the first 6 months, then you should quit. Right. I mean, well, because that's the only way you can trust that process. So let's sort of use this then to go into what I want to call like projects. Mm-hmm. So you've already started Mantri. So let's work with the project sort of within Mantri. At the beginning, again, you said you totally jump into things, but there's probably something that goes on there to make you. So I'm going to see if we can tie it to a post you wrote on Medium a couple days ago called Buy Me Some Ramen, I believe.
Yeah.
Buy Me Some Ramen and Cracker Jacks. So you and your buddy Dave got on an overnight plane, talking about energy conservation. You got on an overnight plane and you flew into Tokyo. And you went to some baseball games and you ate a bunch of food. You came home and you started a new sort of box or a project mm-hmm. within Mantri. Mm-hmm. Internationally inspired tailgate spreads. Mm-hmm. So as that project, you came up with this idea. What goes through your head, yours or your co-founders? Do you have a written process at this point, or is it just a gut check? Do you check the market? What do you do to decide that something like this is now worth yours and your team's time, energy, and resources?
Yeah, no, our box and what we do at Mantri, I mean, we just, to for anyone listening, we do with Mantri, it's a food of the month club, and we deliver 6 different food products from different small artisan American makers every 2 months. And each box or crate has a theme. And the themes, I am sort of the lead curator of the box experience. And you might think of something like Dollar Shave Club, which is more of a utility where you're getting a razor blade every month. And when you run out of razor blades, they're going to send you a new one. Whereas in our subscription box area of the world, it's more about curation. It's more like a magazine where you just subscribe to Wired or GQ or something. And every month that you read the magazine, you just kind of expect them to find what's interesting, show you new things, help you cook better, you know, help maybe in Wired to tell you about new startups, tell you about hacks for building your own business. So it's more of a curation. And so where I've gotten to now with Mantri and the curation of it is we're always trying to tell a story. And, you know, we've now sent out, we've sent out over 400 products, and we've curated over 50 boxes of 6 different products and 50 different themes. And so it's kind of coming up with a new product every 2 months. And I really do just draw inspiration from anywhere. Like in that story, I'm sitting at this baseball game in Japan and people are chanting, and you go down to the concession booth and it's ramen and gyoza and bubbling soups and, you know, hot dogs covered in seaweed and Japanese mayo. And I'm going like, holy shit, like this is totally different food at a sporting event than you'd find in America. So the idea was, let's do a tailgate themed box, which typical familiar food, like maybe wings or hot dogs or something like that, but giving it an international feel. So we do something like, you know, we find an amazing Thai sriracha sauce and we do a sriracha wings recipe, or we find a special Thai chili pickled jalapenos and put them on nachos, whatever. But the idea being drawing an inspiration from somewhere so that we can tell the story of how maybe the rest of the world eats when they're at their sporting event back here in North America.
I love it. At what point, so 50, I believe, something boxes into it. At what point did you realize the need to tie a story to it?
Well, we almost did it from the beginning. I mean, John, the thing with Mantri is it's like there's no punches about it. It's like you sign up, you pay $49 every 2 months, and you get what you get. Like, it's a surprise. And a lot of people are like, we just started it that way. And I don't know, maybe we'd be 10 times bigger if we showed you what you got in every box. Maybe we'd be dead in the water 3 years ago if we showed you what you got in every box. But it's a surprise. And people just sign up to receive what they're going to receive. And I just got, it came down to me where I think about the third box in, I just sort of thought and went like, listen, we're either telling a story here and really showing people something and taking people on a journey every 2 months, or it's just a box of crap. You know what I mean? And you see so many like sort of subscription box things that fade away. And, you know, you have to look at it, like I said, more like a magazine, which is like, maybe this month we're going to explore the food of Tennessee and 6 different products. And we're going to put in this moonshine cake and we're going to put in this hot chicken mix because Nashville has the famous fried hot chicken recipe. And then maybe 2 months later, we're going to go check out 6 different Indian inspired products that are made here in the US. And then maybe we're going to go check out a grilling themed box. And it's about kind of taking people on this journey where even if they don't like absolutely everything in the crate, they're learning something and they're showing them different food products, different experiences. And so when we, you know, after about box 1 or 2, I realized like, that's sort of what we're in the game of storytelling and helping guys cook better more than just like putting things in a box.
So it really hasn't, it's not like you launched a piece of software. Like, I mean, when you say like just that ability to launch quickly, that's like a software thing, right? Mm-hmm. Launch it, version 1, be embarrassed by it in a year and iterate. Mm-hmm. You sound like you picked it and you've done the same thing for 50.
Yeah, but I mean, yes, very, very true on the software comparison, but we do change, everything changes every 2 months.
Oh,
so
right,
it's 6 different new products, a new theme. And so it is kind of like reinventing something. And I mean, if you're picking six different products and writing six different blurbs and doing a different six different recipes and photo shoots every 2 months and like trying to bring in all the products from across North America to the one central facility, batch them up and ship them out, you kind of have to make, you have to get good at making quick, concise decisions, whether they're wrong or right. And so that's where I think the kind of like timeliness of the decisions have come in. But yeah, the structure of it, as far as like having that deadline every 2 months to the having to ship, has helped a lot. I mean, I think it'd be a totally different business if we didn't have a subscription where we had to ship every 2 months, you know, where we kind of came out with products as we felt necessary, right? So that that built-in time bomb is helpful for creation.
And so from sort of the inception of the idea for Mantry to sort of creating your first box, how long did it take you and how did you find your first customers?
Okay, this is a complete, for anyone listening that wants to start their own business, I don't know if this is a good plan to follow or not, but I basically sat in a bar with my co-founder and we said, listen, if we're going to, we came up, I think the original idea was like Man Baskets, I think was the name. And then we were like, okay, that sounds like, that sounds terrible. Like Mantry is like pretty terrible, but Mantry is
good. Mantry, you get what Mantry is.
Yeah, want like we wanted to be like, don't worry. For everyone listening, we don't take Mantry very seriously. It's a tongue-in-cheek name. It's meant to basically tell people who we're trying to help.
Totally.
And we're trying to help guys cook better. And sometimes on the internet, it's better to be overtly obvious and pick your niche than to be kind of blasé. I'm sure we could have called it like Sprouted Crate or something. But it wouldn't mean anything to anyone. So we picked, when we came up with the name, we were originally like, oh, Man Baskets. And then we came up with Mantry. And I think, you know, I basically said like, listen, like if we're going to do this, like this needs to be on the internet in like 3 days, because everybody knows that there is sort of a law of diminishing returns on like how, if you're ever going to launch, like every day that goes by on an idea, it just gets like farther and farther away from the chance that you're actually going to start the thing. So I think we like met on Wednesday. And by Friday, we had like a crappy WordPress. I like called my friend, I think Dave, it was the same guy I went to Japan with. I was like, Dave's a reoccurring theme. I was like, he knew how to code. So I was like, put a buy button on this WordPress page. We threw it up in Toronto. I think we like blasted out, I want to say we blasted out like one email to like BlogTO in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And they wrote like a tiny piece. And within like 2 days, somebody bought a Mantry. And we were like, okay, crap, we have absolutely no product, right? All we had at that point were like basically a website that said who we were with a blurb and a buy button. So we went to like Kensington Market and we just tried to find six of the coolest things we could find. And we wrote up like a little booklet and we put it in the box. And the actual crate comes from Rodney's Oyster Bar in Toronto. They get their oysters in these wood crates. The oysters are like sealed off, but they come in these wood crates and Rodney's just sort of threw them out the back door. And so I remembered from kitchens that oysters came in these kind of cool crates. So we like went over to Rodney's and we put these six products in the box with like the little booklet and got in Kyle's Acura and drove over to somebody's house who'd order it. And I banged on the door and I dropped the crate off and I ran away. So that was the first, that was literally the first customer. And then eventually we got like national distribution and professionally made wood crates and, you know, a whole supply chain, but it was probably like a little bit less rough than selling golf balls on the side of the golf course out of an egg carton. Very similar start.
Okay. And so now 5 years later, are you still somewhat acquiring customers in the same way, like getting press, getting out there, people find you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is the age old question, is it's like, how do you drive customer acquisition? And Mantry has always been steady. We're very lucky to have a great gift market as well. One thing that we didn't anticipate when we started the business was guys are really hard to shop for, and women and men who are buying for fathers, brothers, husbands, boyfriends, nephews. Apparently, guys are really tough to shop for. So Mantry becomes a really easy gift. So that's always been a good support for driving new customers as well. People just receiving it as a gift. But press has been, we got really lucky with press when we launched in the US. We were on the Today Show, Oprah. We were on, you know, USA Today. And now it's more just, we've moved into that kind of, I love the Kathy Sierra, you know, ideology that I think like the guys from Basecamp, like DHH and Jason Fried always tout, which is like out teaching versus out spending. Like Mantry is an unfunded business. We're healthy and profitable, but like we're never going to outspend some big VC behemoth. So we just focus on out teaching and just trying to be, hey, here's a cool recipe. And hey, here's five or six of the best undiscovered hot sauces, and trying to use the blog and use social media and use our email list and just try and educate them and draw out people that would find the service interesting. Because, you know, if you write a blog post on, let's say, seven best undiscovered barbecue sauces in America, I don't know, maybe sometimes some 30 people will read that, but maybe six of the 30 will be the type of person that loves discovering barbecue sauce, and you've got a hit, right? So
exactly.
I think I'm not sitting here to say we've got a silver bullet. I think there's a lot of, I'll just say that I think there's a lot of businesses that it can be daunting for entrepreneurs starting businesses because they see companies that are everywhere and they just don't realize that they're burning like $50 million in VC money on marketing. And sometimes it's better to just go like, okay, sometimes I set goals that are like, okay, let's just add four people a day. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's just not lose, let's just not churn people and just add people, you know, and that snowball will grow. And even if it's not even adding subscribers, but like, let's just engage like 25 people today, you know, let's just start and just building that audience. There's a focus now more on that for driving customers.
And I mean, really focusing on like that churn rate, right? So not losing customers,
yes,
right? Some people get so focused on the front end, the acquisition, and then they just treat their customers kind of like garbage. And you can like, you have to just keep feeding the front just because you're losing them all at the back. And it sounds like you guys have a good consistent turnaround. People like what they get from you, which makes it obviously easier in the acquisition stage.
Yeah, I think just a quick point on that. I mean, any entrepreneur that doesn't tell you that they don't know what the hell's going on with half their business is totally full of it. We do some things really well, and you know, but with, we also do some things that I'm sure our churn rate could be better. I'm sure our churn rate could be worse. I'm sure we could get new customers every day better. I'm sure it could be worse. But I think for a lot of businesses and entrepreneurs just starting out, the one thing that like I focused on was like, I mean, with subscription, like if we just hold somebody for two more months, it's like adding, basically it's like adding two new people who stay for a month, right? And for us, like getting one customer and finding one customer in the right place that might stay on for, like we have customers that have been on for 4 or 5 years. Like that's worth slowly over time, like 46 Mantries or something, or 48 Mantries, right? It's like, it's crazy with subscription, as long as you can sort of build and keep these customers, like how important a good customer is. So we do a thing like every year, if you've been subscribed, we'll just say, hey, like you can gift a Mantry to anyone you want. Like we'll just do little things like that. And it's not complex, and like it's not like a whole system. I give out my email and I say, hey, just let us know if you want me to send like a Mantry to somebody. But I think, yeah, to your point, a lot of people focus a lot on new people coming in when there's like holes in their bucket of like retaining. And then the last thing I'd say about that is like, you also have to realize that like 10 or 15%, especially in our case, like 10 or 15%, like they're just not going to be that into it. Like they're not going to be like against our company, but maybe they don't like the surprise, or maybe the first box that they get, they just get like a couple too many spicy foods and they're not into spicy food. Like there's just, you just got to realize that like you're not going to keep everyone. And that's maybe where the 80-20 thing comes in, which is just like focusing on the reality that like, okay, 20 people are probably just going to leave no matter what you do. And 20 people are just going to stay no matter what you do. And you're really trying to like, you're really just trying to like engage and serve like this group in the middle and bump them on to like becoming great members of yours. You know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. And it ties back to just like, I mean, that idea of like, not everyone's going to like it. It's just the way it is. Well, it's true, right? I mean, but also
I never hear anyone say that either.
It's taking it to heart. Not like, well, Mantry sucks because these people don't like it. It's like, it's just not for them. And it can't be for everyone.
Right. It's like if your friend brings you to like, if your friend brings you to a polka dance and you have no interest whatsoever in polka, and the guy who runs the Poke Bar would like look at you and be like, oh, that customer, like, how did we get him in the door? And then they never came back. But like, the fact of the matter is, like, you just didn't really care. You were brought there by somewhere else. You had nothing against what they were doing, but you just didn't care, right? And like, too many businesses and entrepreneurs, like, they focus on every single customer without just taking the attention that goes into, like I said, maybe that bottom 10 or 15% that hey, they're just not going to be that into it, and like doubling down on that group that you can sway.
Totally. Very well said. Very well said. All right, Reggie, this has been a blast, man. I want to wrap up on one final big question for you, if I can.
Yeah.
This idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. It seems to be that I've talked to like 330 something entrepreneurs now. And it seems to be this gap where no matter what we accomplish personally and in our businesses, to us, our success is always in the future. So in 3 months, when you hit that revenue metric, in 6 months, when you get to stand on that stage, whatever it happens to be that you set for yourself, no, before you hit that goal, Reggie, you're going to set 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future. You've come a long way since collecting golf balls, going through school, starting two businesses, right? But I would love it, rather than looking forward right now, I would love it, Reggie, if you could stop, turn around and look behind you. This whole journey, sort of the highs, the lows, the wins and the losses, but tell me how you feel about everything you've accomplished up until today.
Okay, I love this question because this is nobody ever actually realizes that like they're moving how much ground they've covered until you look backwards. Mm-hmm. There are times when I'm like, I've done absolutely nothing. I'm a loser. It's been 2 years. Like, what am I really doing? And then I'll look back and I'll be like, oh my God, like that happened and this happened and I traveled here and I traveled there and you know, everything's actually amazing. So, I love this idea of looking back and wait, what was the actual question? Just to answer it, just cause I want to make sure I answer like your specific question.
Yeah, totally. It's this gap we live in between success and where we are. And I want you to stop that by looking back and telling me how you feel about all of it until today.
Yeah. So I'll put it this way. I've been lucky because very early on, I knew that I was very interested in food. And as you can see in the trajectory of working in professional kitchens to going to school and doing dinner parties at school and then doing the social feed, throwing long table dinner parties and then doing Mantry, helping guys cook better and delivering different products from around the US, there's always been that theme of food. And that's always been sort of the background music to everything that I'm doing. And I think I feel like I'm now at 30, just at a point where like I can go to the next level as far as really being able to pick a business and a project for like the next 20 years that I'm really just totally happy with. And I was very lucky with Mantry in doing this business because it's a nice systematic business. And it revolves around food and I get to create something different every 2 months. And like, I truly enjoy working on Mantry every single day. And more importantly, it like frees up time for me to work on other things, like just building, like working on writing, let's say a book on food or working on a travel writing and that type of thing. And so I think to answer your question, I can only put it as a way that like when you pick, I'm very happy that I just stuck to one theme, but all the things within the theme changed. Food was always the overarching interest that I knew that I was interested in. I was interested in food like somebody's just interested in like sports when they're young, right? And so by picking that, there's always been a deep well of energy. And I've always been able to repurpose the project under that umbrella of food. So I feel good and confident that in that decision, I mean, I maybe could have built something that was bigger or better, or made more money. I could have maybe done the opposite. But I feel like now I know for the next 10 years, like I've got all the skills that we've learned through the last two businesses and I'll stick in food. And I'm just sort of excited to like build on that. So to answer your question, I think something that gives me at least a little bit of peace in, like, quote unquote, my career as an entrepreneur is that, like, I was lucky that I just didn't bounce around too much. I think a lot of people go try and be a real estate agent for a year or two, and then they'll go try and be work on, I don't know, mining or something, or they'll go try and be a stockbroker, and they just bounce around. And, like, if you kind of stay in the same realm, it's crazy how it just kind of, like, your spatial knowledge and your knowledge just kind of compounds in the area, and you just feel a little bit more at peace with what you're trying to do.
I love it. I feel like I made you work with that question, but, you know, that's what you're here for.
Yeah. I hope that wasn't too long-winded of an answer.
No, man.
Basically, pick something that you're interested in.
Yeah, or the theme of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be working in a kitchen.
Yeah.
You're doing something which lots of people could see as completely different, yet you drive and pull your energy from there.
Yeah, I think it's like a musician. Like, a lot of people go, oh my God, I want to be a band. I want to be a musician. I want to be in a rock band. And then, like, when they don't make it, they quit. But it's like, there's so many ways to repurpose a skill nowadays, especially with the internet and stuff like that, to just find a way to, like, monetize it and make it work.
Exactly. All right. So, Reggie, we've got to talk about Mantri in passing. You briefly got to tell the listener about it, but I would love it if you could give them the elevator pitch and then tell them how and where to track you guys down.
Oh, the elevator pitch. I don't think I've ever actually given. We've never had an investment, so I don't think I've ever given the elevator pitch. But yeah, Mantri is a food of the month club. Mantri, it means modern man's pantry. And when we started it, we saw a groundswell of small, undiscovered makers making things like barbecue sauce, salami, mustard, all across North America that were going undiscovered, that weren't on grocery shelves. So it's about uncovering six of those every 2 months, showing them off under a unique theme that tells a story. Maybe it's grilling, or maybe the theme's bourbon breakfast, or maybe the theme is showcasing different products from the Florida panhandle. But it's just about connecting people to small, interesting makers and people doing cool things in the country, as well as just generally speaking, the overarching goal being, like, helping guys cook better, making them feel more confident in the kitchen, everything from tips to dinner parties to just, hey, what to do with that awesome hot sauce we sent you. So pretty simple stuff. We're not necessarily, going to save the world or go to Mars anytime soon, but it's our own little niche on the internet.
Very cool. It's Mantri.com.
It is Mantri.com, Mantry.com. You can check it out. And then you mentioned, like, I think one great place to just get engaged is, like, if you go to Medium.com, Medium.com/, I think we're at Mantri. That's our blog, and we put tons of stuff up there, and you can get a feel for kind of what we're up to before you go check that out before you hit the buy button, just to make sure you like it.
Yeah, that's where you'll read the stories about each of the boxes.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to link to all of this on the show notes on hacktheentrepreneur.com for you for when you're ready and at a computer. I'll get Mantri.com. I'll get the Medium link for you. I'm going to find a link to that Bill Walsh book, Trust the Process.
Yeah.
I'm also going to try and find this blog.to article, the original one about Mantri. I don't know if it's still there.
I don't know if I have it. Oh my God. That'd be great if you could find it.
That's the starting point. That would be cool.
I don't know who that writer is, but, like, I should buy him a beer, because
you should.
We were like 10 hours old, and he was like, yeah, I'll write an article. And so I don't know who that was, but we owe him a beer.
Yeah. So I'm going to try and find that if I can. And Mantri's also on Twitter, Snapchat, Facebook, everywhere else. I'll track down some of those links and also add that there. Reggie, once again, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for opening up and sharing with us. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it's really awesome to watch.
Yeah, John, thank you. And thanks for asking, like, different questions. I really appreciate that, because you kind of get the same stuff. And you had some unique questions that I think it's good when I actually have to think in these things. So I appreciate the questions.
Thanks. Take care.
Take care.
Have you ever hired a promising applicant only to find out their best performance was during the job interview? Whether screening candidates for an important position or looking for ways to improve productivity, Caliper can help. To find out more, visit calipercorp.com/hack. That's CalipCorp. calipercorp.com/hack. Well, Reggie, I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate that. I learned so much about you. I knew about Mantri, but I didn't know I didn't know the origin story. I love that I got to look up that blog post you were talking about for blogto.com, and it's still there. You hustled. You just emailed people, told them about your business that hadn't even started, was nothing. You got published in a local paper in a big city, and you got your first customers. Then you hustled to just get out there and get the product and get it to them. And now 5 years later, you're in New York and doing this still. It's a great story. I really, really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed being part of the story. And now I enjoy getting to go back. It's that part of the show where I'm going to go back and I'm going to listen to the show. I'm going to listen through the conversation and see what it is I missed. So I went back and I listened, and I went back and I listened again. That second time through the conversation, there was something that I had missed, and I have no idea how I did it, but I did. There was the one thing that Reggie said that was so very, very, very clear. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Something that I struggle with a lot with entrepreneurship is just realizing that it's like an energy game, and realizing that you are just going to have like days and weeks that suck, and you just go into these like slumps and these dips, and you're like, should I be doing something else? Should I work on, you know, other projects? And then all of a sudden something great will come out of it, and you'll spring out of it, and you'll be all excited for another month or something. And I just think that for a long, long time, I was sort of like, wasn't as good at managing those troughs.
And that's the hack. Reggie. Those troughs, right? The struggle of entrepreneurship, of knowing that there's going to be sections, huge sections perhaps, that really do suck. It's, and those doubts. So realizing that it is this energy game, right? It's really, there's so much about just managing your energy, how you work, when you work, what to work on, what to focus on, how to take these slumps or these troughs, as Reggie says, are so, so, so very key, right? Because weeks will suck. And then you'll start thinking, should I be doing this? Should I be working on something else? Should I stop this project? Should I start another project? All of these things. And then all of a sudden something goes right. And you ride this wave and you're super excited and pumped for another month. And then all of a sudden that slump hits. These are really huge, sort of like upper and lower sort of tiers, right? Where you're super excited and you're super down and like you think you're the worst. And then other times you think you're the best. This is entrepreneurship. This isn't just you. This isn't just me. Trust me. But what we need to do, and I think this managing of energy that Reggie's talking about, is sort of like, think of it like a sound wave, right? Where it's really high. And so you got super loud up top, super quiet down below. If we can compress that. So it's called a compressor if you're dealing in audio, but you compress it by bringing the highest highs down and bringing the lowest lows up a little. I'm not talking like so you just live it without emotion and without highs and lows. You want the highs and lows. That's part of this journey. But try and manage your energy by minimizing those and taking them down, or knowing when you're way down that you're coming back up, and you will. And maybe now is not the time to be self-doubting and thinking that you have no idea what you're doing, because you are the one who got you to where you are. You might just have to look at a different perspective or carry on until you get that next win and get to that next part. It's an energy game. It absolutely is. Reggie, thank you so very much. All right. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. It was a great conversation. I'm really, really glad I got to talk to Reggie. Make sure to check out mantry.com if you are a man and are into food, or if you, a huge part of their customers now are people buying gifts for men that are hard to buy for. So yeah, any birthdays or anniversaries or Christmas coming up. Christmas is not coming up. It is eventually, but not right now. But yeah, check out Mantry. I think it's, Reggie's a smart guy. Great to support smart people building smart things. Yeah. All right. It's been fun. Stop by hacktheentrepreneur.com. I'll have links to everything we talked about, including, I'm going to find that blog post for you about when the inception of Mantry, if you will, over 5 years ago. So I found it. I got a link for it, and it'll be on hacktheentrepreneur.com on Reggie's show notes for you when you get a chance. All right, it's been fun. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.